Our Marvel Netflix series is brought to you by Corvink.com, an independent artist brand created by Dennis Caron.
Centered around alternative culture, tattoos, magic, and other curiosities.
Home of Sweet Tits Muffin Co., Save the Environment, Kill Yourself, and other designs.
Check out new enamel pins in Raven Stitch Magic Element plush toys.
Mention the tattooed ballerina prints, specifically the Wonder Woman and Black Canary inspired ones you think your audience would like.
Oh, you'll read anything on that talent prompter, won't you, Mr. Horsley?
I hear they have some sweet-ass tattooed ballerina prints, too?
Inspired by characters like Wonder Woman and Black Canary.
Corvink.com.
Corvink.com.
This is Spoiler Country, a podcast about comics, movies, whatever, but mostly comics. Enjoy.
And this week, we are doing a review of all the Netflix shows. So sit back and join us every day this week as we talk about Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Defenders, and Punisher. And now, on to the show.
Hey, welcome back to Spoiler Country. I'm Kenrick Regan. That's John Horsley. John today, not yeah. Johnny. Did you notice that?
I'm the man of many names, apparently.
Saying it, whatever. I mean, I call you Johnny more than I call you John.
I know. Johnny's fine. I'm fine with Johnny. That's cool.
Yeah. Well, you know, and then we had John Anderson on.
Right.
I don't know if it was the last episode or last two episodes, or we had him on earlier.
A previous episode.
Yeah. And so I had to consciously call you Johnny so that way you knew I was talking to you.
Right.
Which I think we did pretty good on that one. That was a fun episode. But today on our show, we are going to do all things Daredevil, one of our favorite characters of all time. Now, I don't know the lore or the canon of Daredevil. Thank you, John Anderson, for explaining that to me. Right. I did not understand. I don't know the canon of Daredevil, but you do.
I know
and
a lot of it.
So this should be a lot of fun. But before we get into that, let's go into, remember to follow us on Facebook, check us out on Twitter, listen to us on SoundCloud, on iTunes, on Google Play, on TuneIn, on YouTube. We are on YouTube, though we don't update YouTube as much as we should.
We should do that. I mean,
but we do have a lot of our episodes are there.
Right. And some exclusive videos from the various cons is up there as well.
That's right. Don't forget to go check us out on our website at www.spoilercountrypod.com.
Also, we have Instagram too. We post all of our episodes up our Instagram as well as I do like some story stuff with like some behind the scenes pictures and little notes and shit up there too. So,
yep. And then on a side note, if you listen to us on iTunes, please, if you enjoy the show, subscribe to the show and give us a rating of 5 stars. That makes a huge difference for us because it helps us get up into the system within iTunes that gets other people to see us and maybe give us a chance. And that really helps out. So if you see us, please review. Please give us 5 stars.
Right. And if you want to have a conversation with us, you want to talk to us, hit us up on Twitter, you know, Spoiler Country there. We're very active there. But if you also want to talk to us but not make it public, you can email us, spoilercountry@gmail.com, and we'll answer you as soon as we get to it.
That's right. So let's have a lot of fun. So, Daredevil. Should we start with, I think the quintessential Daredevil run was Frank Miller's. I think a lot of the stuff that you see on TV today and what anybody actually understands of who Daredevil is really coming from that lineage. I could be wrong because I think they're using Elektra in the Netflix saga differently.
Yeah, you're not wrong. A lot of the Daredevil Netflix show comes from elements of Frank Miller's storylines. While Daredevil was always a sleeper hit for Marvel, like he was never like top tier, but he was also never anything below like maybe second tier as one of the characters. He was a popular character for a long time. His stories really became iconic when Frank Miller took him over at issue 157, I think it was.
Classic covers, dude. That's what I remember with Daredevil, Frank Miller's run. The scene when he has the 45 and or the 44 and he's pointing the gun right at the comic, you know, right coming out of the comic book.
Those covers are so fantastic.
Yeah. The one where he's hugging the gravestone of Elektra.
Yep.
All of that is just, they're iconic. I don't know how else to put it.
One of the best ones ever is the one with Bullseye holding the scythe through Elektra's stomach and the one she dies in.
Yeah.
Come on. It's so cool. And those are old books and those covers still hold up as being just iconic. One of the things Miller did on this series is I heard it described this one way as Frank Miller was one of the first ones to tell cinematic comics, to where when you read the paneling and how he drew things, it was done very cinematically. And it's just, if you haven't read his run of Daredevil from, I think it's issue one, he first drew it at 157. I think he took over the art and the story, I think around 161 or 160. And the whole Bullseye and Elektra run, it's some of the best, like, just gritty storytelling that came out of that decade.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, Frank Miller, for all the things that people have said, and he's gotten kind of, let's just say, eccentric the older that he's gotten.
That's a good way to say it.
Yeah. But he, that stuff in the 80s, man, in the late 70s, coming, you know, starting with Daredevil and then moving into Batman. And I know you don't like his take on Superman so much, but his Batman stuff was fucking spectacular.
Oh, no, it's really good. I'll give him that. He writes a good Batman.
Yeah. But, you know, what's funny is if you think about how you felt about Daredevil, kind of without the money, being Marvel's version of Spider-Man, more than people, because a lot of people say that about Moon Knight, that's Marvel's Batman.
Right, they do. I really feel it's more Daredevil, though. But
you think it's more Daredevil. And well, it kind of makes a lot of sense, too, because even though he doesn't use a lot of gadgets, but he does a lot of hand-to-hand, and he's, you know, and he uses the fear factor. He's the devil of Hell's Kitchen.
That's why I think he fits more into with Batman.
Yeah, he uses that fear. Batman's the bat of Gotham, and Daredevil's the devil of Hell's Kitchen, and he uses a lot of more of that fear tactics, which is makes a lot of sense, because Moon Knight's just crazy.
Oh, Moon Knight is just batshit crazy. I mean, he can't really hold. I get why people say he's the Marvel Batman, but
because he's rich,
But he's just fucking,
and
just
he's got all the gadgets. Insane.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, on the surface, they are the same, but I think mentally, the mentality of what they're doing, I think you're more spot on comparing Daredevil.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so because I said it, but yeah, I mean.
So, how many of the? Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, correction, Miller started penciling Daredevil issue 158. I just wanted to correct myself. I saw
you
here.
You went off.
Yeah, I was.
We didn't
want to
have another 121 incident on our hands.
Exactly. I don't want you to hold it up my head for the next 30 fucking episodes.
That was some funny stuff. That was episode one, wasn't it?
That was episode one.
Oh, that is hilarious. And now we're like 33 in or 32 in.
Yeah. Well,
and it still rears its ugly head. That's hilarious. You know what's funny about that is that on that episode, I said that the whole Secret Empire storyline, that Captain America was a clone. And then on the second episode, I said, oh, I can't say that. No, he's not. And then it fucking comes out. Right. He's a fucking clone.
the whole Secret Empire thing was so dumb.
Yeah. Well, you can't. I mean,
whatever. I don't know.
What are you going to do?
Not read it.
Right. I read the Captain America where he says, Hail Hydra. And then I haven't read anything of that line since.
And they're like, let's let it play out. I'm like, I don't want to let it play out. I don't want Captain America to be a fucking Nazi. I mean.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it. Even if he is. I mean, I think they kind of forced themselves to make him a clone.
Yeah, I think so too.
Like, I think they, at the beginning, wanted it to be actually Captain America.
Yeah, I think so too.
You know what I mean? And then the backlash.
Turned it on their head. And yeah, the backlash just screwed it.
Because that's just messed up. You can't do that. I mean, that's messing with something that Jack Kirby held really dear to his heart.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. Yeah,
and his writing partner in the 40s, that was their first actual hit.
Yeah, Joe Simon and Jack Kirby, and they're, you know.
And those covers?
Those covers are great.
Punching out, punching out
first
Hitler.
Issue, first appearance, punching Hitler in the face.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't know. There's just certain things you don't mess with, and that's one of them. You know?
I agree. It'd be like making Superman non-American, which, I mean, for a one shot like Red Sun makes sense, and like, you know, something that's completely out of canon, but like, or just making Superman all of a sudden become a communist, you know?
Hey,
just,
if they did like a what if issue, of Captain America as a Hydra agent, then that's different.
Yeah, what if, you know, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, but putting it into the main storyline like that, not cool.
No, not cool at all.
Yeah, just
totally screws things up.
But. And I don't understand how Marvel editors would let that go through and say, "Oh yeah, let's do this."
I don't know. I mean, the whole shock value of trying to sell issues, and I think it was just not shock value. It ended up being people just were just disappointed with it because it's disappointing.
But you know, hey, I don't know. We're not in that room. You know what I mean? They thought it was a good idea. I guess if I was in that room, I would have been like, "I don't think this is a good idea." But at the same time, you know. What are you going to do?
Exactly. What are you going to do? I don't know.
I mean, they're trying to something new, and you can't fault them for that.
But yeah, I mean, keep trying something new. It's, as we said before, you know, do what you think is going to do best for you, but don't be surprised when you try to do something that's so controversial that it backfires on you, you know?
Right. I mean, but I think they wrapped up that whole thing pretty quickly. And, you know, and it was one writer that had the storyline, right?
Yeah.
And
Nick Spencer, I believe.
Yeah. And I don't know Nick Spencer from Adam, and he might be great. I mean, I his other stuff might be amazing, you know?
Well, he wrote Morning Glories. Have you read Morning Glories?
No, is it good?
Well, I started reading Morning Glories last night, and I read the first two issues, and I don't know how I feel about it yet. Like, it's not bad, but it's intriguing. I just can't tell if I enjoy it or if I'm just reading it because I've already committed to it, you know?
Right.
But it's definitely not bad, and it's written well. I just don't know how I feel about it yet.
Well, see, well, there you go. And the thing is in my own perverse mind, I'm not going to read that Captain America storyline, but it might be amazing.
Exactly.
I'm just going by what I'm reading online, which is terrible because I shouldn't talk about it and I shouldn't give a review on something that I have not read. And I don't like doing that. But at the same time, it's just a part of Captain America that I don't want messed with. And that's just me. Right? I mean, other people might have no problem with it, not care, and just read it and enjoy it. And I hope they do enjoy it and go out and read it and check it out and, you know, let me know.
Yeah, I feel I'm the same way as you. I really feel like I base my opinion on what the story is about, what I read online, which is a horrible thing to do. But it goes against my feeling of Captain America, and I'm just not interested in reading that story.
Right. From what I've read online and the fact that they, you know, I picked up that issue of Captain America knowing that he was going to say it. But when he read it, I felt dirty. Like, I didn't want to read it. And then I was like, oh, I don't like this.
Yeah, I don't like this
at all. Even though I'm not even a big Captain America fan, I was just like, this just seems like it's just, I don't know. I didn't like it. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to read the rest of these. But then again, it might be like, you know, if I told you you've never really read a Batman comic book, right? Because I've never really read a Captain America comic book. And if I told you you've never really read a Batman comic book and you're like, I'm not really a good fan of Batman. I don't really care. But then I said, yeah, but dude, you got to read The Dark Knight Returns. Amazing story. He beats up Superman. Just that line alone, you would be like, oh, hell no, I'm not reading that.
Yeah, hell no, I don't care about that.
You know what I'm saying? And I can kind of see that. But at the same time, you'd be missing one of the best Batman stories ever told.
Yeah, I will fully commit that story is a great Batman story.
Yeah.
It is. I just don't – we've gone over. I just don't care for the Superman part of it. But
yeah, whatever. Yeah,
exactly. But anyways, we should probably go back to Daredevil because we're way off pace here.
Well, that all came from Frank Miller, and then we started. I don't know how we end a round came out like that.
Captain
that was kind
America.
Of crazy. Yeah, we ended up talking about Cap. What?
but so Daredevil.
When you read,
is
go
great.
Ahead. Well, I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
Because I haven't read a lot of Daredevils, but how many have you read? How many do you think you've read?
So I've read the Miller run.
The Miller run's pretty big.
Well, like the main, it's like 20 issues or so.
No, dude, no. It's like over 50.
Well, I'm just talking about the main from when he started through to when Electra died. It's like 150 through 188 or something like that.
Yeah, let's look it up. Yeah. Well, because I'm curious, what when you look at the Daredevil run, what is your favorite storyline?
The Bullseye Electra storyline is my favorite one.
Hey, cover your ears if you don't know already.
Right.
Where Bullseye kills Electra.
Well, I'm looking up right now how many issues he did.
Yeah. I thought it was like quite a bit. I thought he went all the way in the 200s.
No, he did. He started penciling issue 158. He took over the writing, I think, issue 160 something.
Yeah. Okay, so he did 79 to 83.
Yeah.
1979 to 1983 as the artist, and then from 81 to 83 as the writer and artist.
He finished on issue 191.
And then he came back in 1986 for a year or for a little bit. I don't know how many issues he did. And then that was it.
Yeah. But that that storyline with Elektra and Bullseye is probably one of my favorite classic stories of Daredevil.
Yeah.
It's just Daredevil Father is also pretty good too. It's a miniseries that came out, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. Daredevil Yellow is pretty good too. It's another miniseries. But as far as in the main storyline, like, you know, the main Daredevil continuity, I really think that the Frank Miller, you know, Elektra Bullseye story is probably one of the best. Now, there's also another story he did with Typhoid Mary, which is later comes later on, which is
yeah.
Typhoid Mary is a very interesting character. If you don't know who she is, look her up and just read her backstory. It's very funny. But
okay, so just real quick, 158. His last one was in 1983. Was 191.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's almost 40.
Right. But he wasn't writing the first several he did. He was only the penciler on him. But
that's right. But I count the whole thing as Miller.
Yeah. I mean, I don't the ones he was just penciling were that okay, but they really get really good when he starts writing them too.
Oh, he did stuff with Klaus Janson on some of these, dude.
Mm-hmm. Him and Janson have been working for a long time.
Hey, Janson's amazing. Well, Klaus did a lot of the inks in the Dark Knight. He did all the inks in Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm putting the pieces together.
It all comes together.
Together. Yeah. So your favorite though is the Elektra and Bullseye run where,
yeah,
she ends up dying. And why is that your favorite? You think this is more gritty, or do you think it's
no? It just told so well. It's so cinematic. Like it's. Remember, we talked about Silver and how it's basically storyboards for a movie. That's how that storyline's done. It's just the writing is. I mean, again,
do you think that's why Affleck's movie bombed so badly?
I think Affleck's movie bombed so badly because now I'm not saying it's a good movie, and I will say that I enjoyed it when it came out. I was a fan of that movie when it came out, but I didn't think it was good. I just enjoyed it. I think Affleck's movie failed because nobody wanted to give Ben Affleck a chance to play that character. It just, they went too cheesy with it, you know?
Well, because Colin Farrell did an amazing job as Bullseye.
Colin Farrell was fantastic. I would happily have him come back as Bullseye in any movie or any show.
Yeah. I mean, because I'll be honest, dude, I liked it too. I thought it was fun. I didn't understand why people just totally, you know, even Affleck now talks shit about it, but I think he does because so many people did.
Well, I can tell you why people don't like it, and it's mainly because that Daredevil is a gritty character, and you see the Daredevil Netflix show and see how like dark and like, just brutal that show is, and then you watch the Batfleck, or the Bat, I call him Batfleck right now, but you know, right. Affleck one, and it's so bright and colorful, and there, I mean, it's so like happy-go-lucky, and it's not Daredevil.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be true with the hardcore comic fans.
Right.
Right? But I think the majority of the people that went and saw that in the theater didn't even know who Daredevil really was. I mean, they probably had a vague idea, but they didn't understand like what you're talking about.
We got to remember, though, that movie came out in 2003 before comic book movies were like the huge thing. So
yeah, not so much so because Fox X-Men was like the biggest hit of the 90s, you know? I mean, not literally, but for you know, they brought back what comic book movies could be. And then you had Spider-Man coming out in 2001, and Spider-Man, you telling me the Raimi edition of Spider-Man wasn't just blockbuster after blockbuster?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying in our modern times, the last 10 years, we have, you know, 10 plus superhero movies coming out every year, you know, or
yeah, well, that was the beginning of it, right? That was
this is early time, so a lot of that people who went to go see Daredevil
still learning how to make those movies.
Yeah, it was still learning at the time, and people who went to go see that movie, a lot of them knew who Daredevil was from the comics or from cartoons and stuff like that. And it brought in, like, Outliders came in because people saw Spider-Man and X-Men. But I really think most of the people who saw that movie had a little bit of a familiarity with who Daredevil was.
I think they try to make Daredevil Spider-Man.
In that movie, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like you're saying, it's bright, it's colorful. But that makes sense for a Spider-Man movie, unless you're doing Kraven's Last Hunt, of course. But everything else, it's like that makes sense for a Spider-Man movie, right? He's talking shit the whole time as he's beating you up.
Right.
He's, you know, just watch Tom Holland in Civil War. That's how Spider-Man is. And
or in Homecoming.
Yeah.
Which is really good.
Still haven't seen it yet, so don't tell me anything. I just haven't had a chance to go, which sucks because I'm a big Spider-Man fan. So
it's really good.
Hurts.
You're going to love it when you see
good.
It.
Good. Yeah. So. But I think that's what they were doing because in 2003, the Raimi Spider-Mans were the biggest thing on the planet when it came to superhero movies.
Oh, yeah. Back then, Spider-Man and X-Men were giant in movies. That's what it was.
Yeah. And so I could see who did Daredevil. Who did that movie? I don't even know what studio did that movie.
It was Fox.
Yeah. So Fox messed up that movie because they didn't they try to just say, well, let's just do Spider-Man because Sony's having such success, we'll just do that, right?
Yeah,
and it's a similar character because it's acrobatic and he goes all over the place, so we'll go and do that.
Right.
So they when did they lose because it failed so bad? But well, you know,
here's the thing, it didn't actually fail. Like that movie,
yeah, because they did the Electro movie because of it.
Yeah, and we think about it this way, it cost $78 million to make, and it made $179 million box office.
Well, there you go. So it didn't fail at all.
It didn't fail at all. People just talk shit about it after the fact.
But they never made another one, so they must have lost their licensing on Daredevil because now he's back in with Marvel.
Yeah, they did. They lost license. They let it lapse, and then Elektra was such a bomb. So Elektra bombed hard.
Yeah,
and you know they just let it lapse, and they couldn't figure out what to do with it. Then Netflix got it, you know, Marvel got it back and got to Netflix and then made what the amazing show they have now is.
What is Disney going to do? Because Disney's coming out with their own streaming service. You know, and they already said they're going to pull all the Disney movies, the animated Disney movies, off of Netflix. Then they said, well, we're not going to pull the Marvel movies off. But now they've came out and said, yeah, we're going to pull the Marvel movies off as well.
So the last I heard is that... The last I heard was that the Netflix deal was still in place, so the Netflix shows will stay on Netflix, and then everything else is going to go over to the new Disney streaming service.
Yeah, but that's going to be interesting, right? Because at some point, you know, what's that deal worth, and what's going to happen with it?
Right. Well,
because Disney could still do those shows over on, and they'd be just as good.
But Disney's not doing the shows. Netflix is producing the shows, not Disney.
Yeah, but I wonder if they'll look like, hey, we're using our characters and we'll buy them from you or something.
I mean, for them to do the same thing, they'd have to get the same studios that's making them now to go work for Disney, which they don't. They work for, from my understanding, those studios work for Netflix.
Yeah, it's just interesting, right? It's like, it's kind of funny because all these studios watched to wait to see what happened with Hulu and Netflix, and now that they're all having these giant successes with their content.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden now you have CBS pulling all their content from everybody because they started their own streaming service.
Right, but the thing is, okay, I'm going to stop you there for a second. CBS did do that, but then they undid that because the new Star Trek Discovery show is on Netflix.
Is it really on Netflix?
Yep, it premieres on Netflix weekly. It's the first like weekly show on Netflix. So it's on CBS All Access, but it's also on Netflix because CBS realized that nobody fucking cares about CBS All Access.
Well, they had a lot of signups. They announced today they had a ton of signups for that new show for Star Trek.
Yeah, they did. They're dumb because it's on Netflix. Like, I can go watch it on Netflix right now.
Yeah, but I wonder how many episodes they're going to allow on there. Did you read that they're going to do it weekly and the whole season's going to be on Netflix?
Yeah, that's from what I understand. That's what it's going to be. I've been seeing.
They're not
for
dumb,
it.
Dude. There's a reason for it. You know what I mean? Like, get you hooked on season one, and then hey, you want season two? You got to come over.
Yeah, I think people are going to run a risk here, these studios, that if they keep trying to get their own subscription service like this, I'm not going to subscribe to 15 networks.
Yeah, well, because CBS is owned by Paramount still. So it's not like they don't have a huge backlog of content that they can rely on.
Right.
Because they do. You know what I mean? It's not like... you know, some local television station like KCPQ starting up their own streaming service.
Right.
You know, they're a huge major player in both movies and television content. And then they have shows not just on CBS. They have shows that are on multiple cable channels. And you got to remember, some of those stations like CBS, NBC, and ABC will license different TV shows to each other.
Right. I know,
so there's a lot of content there. And I think you're right, though. I think you're going to – I think at some point it's going to be like, oh, you want ABC or NBC or CBS? You're going to have all these different streaming systems, and it's going to be all a la carte, and people are going to be ass out. I mean, that's one of the dangers of being able to have your choices, right?
Yeah, you know –
either pay the big box with Comcast and have everything or not.
And I'm going to correct myself real quick because I'm looking on – I wanted to verify if Star Trek is on Netflix or not, and – I could have swore that I've been seeing ads for it on Netflix while watching Defenders, like when I'm loading it up. And I'm looking at the website right now, and I don't see it on there. And I looked it up real quick, and it says that you can watch it on international Netflix, but not on U.S. Netflix. I don't know.
Oh, there you go.
I don't know what the truth is on that. I just wanted to make sure I'm not talking out of my ass here. But
Yeah, because that's a big one.
Yeah. And Right. In my eyes, it's pretty big. And just to correct you, the Disney cartoons are still on Netflix right now.
Yeah, they're on there right now, but they are pulling them.
They are. Yeah, they are going to pull them. But they just, what's weird is they're going to pull them, but they just put up Beauty and the Beast, like, recently.
Oh, sure. They're still going to, because they have contracts that were signed, you know, months or years ago. So they have stuff that they have to do. So.
And Star Wars is still up there. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. Like, the Disney will be fine, right? If Warner Brothers did that, Warner Brothers would be fine. I think any other studio might have some trouble because they don't have the properties to pull people in like Warner Brothers and Disney have.
Yeah.
Because Disney has Star Wars, Disney,
you don't think, and
Marvel.
You don't think Paramount could do it?
What does Paramount have that people care about besides Star Trek?
Well, Paramount has like almost 100 years of movies, dude.
But name one.
I don't know them off the top of my head, right, dude. But after 100 years, they're going to have stuff that you and I don't realize.
Okay, but that's my point, though. You can't name anything besides Star Trek that Paramount has, but we can both name like 15 things that Warner Brothers and Disney have. That's my, right, that's my point.
Because they have stuff that we're interested in. Paramount might have stuff that we're not interested in, but still have a huge amount. I'm just saying they might be viable. They might be like the RC Cola of streaming, but they could still be able to be successful with it.
I mean, maybe. I mean, I'm not saying they couldn't be. I'm just saying that they're probably between Paramount and Fox, probably the third and fourth in line of the studios out there that could do it. They're going to have a harder time than a company like Disney or Warner Brothers, who has such a big backlog of. A big catalog of franchises that people love.
Yeah, Paramount has a lot of like Scorsese and Francis Ford Coppolas and stuff like that.
Right, but are people going to pay for a streaming service for those?
Depends. I mean, Scorsese, all he does is make hits. You know, I think you're thinking of things of that have repeat offenders. You know what I mean? Like you have, 12 freaking MCU movies all in a row. You know what I mean? They built this whole thing. And of course, you're going to be more into it. They're doing more of a serial type movie base. I'm not saying that you're wrong by any stretch of the imagination. You're probably right. I'm just saying that I think Paramount is a big enough studio and has enough of a backlog and have things coming out that everybody will want to see at some point that it might be viable for them to do that. That's all.
Maybe.
And their access might be CBS. Their way in might be CBS access.
Paramount's owned by Viacom Cable, so they have a bigger company behind them.
Oh, are they really?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So, I mean,
it'll be interesting. It's an interesting thing to watch.
It is. It is.
Because everything will come out in the wash.
Because personally, I don't want all these companies to make their own streaming service. Just do like one or two, and I subscribe to those ones and save some money.
Well, at some point, somebody will come in and say, look, we're going to have a single service that you can subscribe to.
Right.
You know what I mean? And you'll end up spending like $80 or $60 a month. And then through that, you'll have access to all these other ones.
Right, exactly. It's like right now I pay $50.
Which you basically already did for the last 40 years of your 30 years of your life called Comcast Cable.
I've been paying for Comcast for 30 years. So I was 5 years old.
You know what I'm saying, though.
Right. No, we pay $55 a month for Hulu. But we're doing that because we get...
You pay $55 a month for Hulu?
We do, and here's why. Because Hulu has live TV, and we pay $15 extra, which gives us the $55 mark, which allows us to have unlimited screens. So I can watch Hulu live TV on like 10 TVs at once if I want to.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it has like 50 channels you can choose from. And
I don't watch enough. I don't watch that much TV to do that. I'm checking out the free YouTube TV right now.
Oh, yeah. I've heard about that. I haven't tried it yet, though.
Because they have some local channels.
Do they?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. The only local channel they don't have is KCPQ, Channel 13. But they have I think they have 4, 5, and 7.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you get local news.
I get all my news from YouTube. I'm kidding.
I read all my news. I don't watch a lot. We watch a lot of TV, but we just do like Amazon, and Netflix.
Yeah, same. Amazon, Netflix, and Hulu.
Basic Hulu, basic Hulu, and we get it all from there. And we're able to get it, and then when Game of Thrones is on, I'll subscribe to HBO Go for that. Yeah. But then when Game of Thrones is done, we unsubscribe.
I found out recently that I have HBO access, like full access to HBO. I didn't know that.
Probably because you're spending all that money on Hulu.
Right. No, not from Hulu, but I can log in with an account that I have. I'm like, oh, I have HBO to watch, but I don't watch anything on HBO.
This is,
so
this is how we watch. This is how we talk about Daredevil. We talk about Paramount and right. Access.
Look, we knew for a fact that when we pick a topic, we're going to go way off of it. It's how we roll. All right.
So, we did start talking about Daredevil in Netflix. Yeah. And what is your feelings on the Netflix show for Daredevil?
So, I love it. I mean, I love that show. It's well cast, well acted, well directed. I think season one was a phenomenal season. I've said this before. I think that the Flash TV show on the CW is one of the strongest first seasons of a TV show that's come out in a long time.
But it's got really strong episodes. Yeah. There's some episodes that are really weak.
Right. But I think as a season one of Flash is really good. But I think one of the best. But I think the first season of Daredevil is better and just completely solid, like from start to finish. There's 13 episodes. It takes you from start to finish to where by the end of the show, he is Daredevil. You have Vincent D'Onofrio as Kingpin, which is, oh my God, amazing. And
it's just
the whole thing. You're just on the edge of your seat wanting to watch more and more and more of that first season. And it's amazing.
The only thing I don't like, and I don't know who the actor's name is I don't like how the guy that plays Foggy
Nelson
I don't like how he, I don't know. It just seems like he's always complaining.
See, people always complain about Foggy.
And he's always hurt. But he's always butthurt about everything that happened. It's like, dude, at some point you got to go, you know what? It's not my life. It's your life. You're my friend. I'm going to support you if I can.
Yeah.
And call it a day and stop complaining. It's like, Jesus Christ, go cry in the corner already.
See, I like Foggy.
I like him because I think he's a good friend. You know what I mean? I think in the end, he always does what's best for Matt.
Yeah.
And I like that. You know what I mean? But oh my God, man, do you have to bring up everything and like almost be crying the whole time?
Yes.
You know,
yes, he
just
does.
Do your shit with actions. Don't have to bitch so much.
See, I didn't have a problem with Foggy at all, but I mean, I understand how people would think that way because I read that online. I was like, oh, it's great, but Foggy is such a whiny bitch. I'm like, well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
No, you're not. Like people said, the biggest complaint about season two of Daredevil was Foggy was a whiny little bitch.
Yeah. Well, he was. I mean, and it's like I get being concerned for your friend. Okay, mm-hmm. But at some point you got to be like, well, it's his life.
Yeah, right? But some
make a change in your work life so that you're not affected by it and move on.
Right, but see, not everybody thinks that way, and some people are just more, you know, he sees Matt as a brother and wants to protect him and help him out, and he's hurt. He's hurt by the fact that Matt's doing these things. I mean, I get where he's coming from. I get why you see it that way and why people see it that way. It didn't bother me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be like, dude, you got to stop.
Yeah. But I thought,
because I'm not going to stop doing this. Right. And then, so you have to either get on board or go.
Right. I liked how in that show they made his faith, because in the comics, his Catholic faith is very big to him, very important.
Right.
And
right.
I think the way they integrated that into the show was not over the top and not in your face, but very like just very natural and built in to his character.
Right.
And
right.
I like that. I like that a lot.
What's the girl's name?
Karen Page.
She came from True Blood.
Yeah. Deborah.
She came from True Blood.
Yeah. It's Deborah Ann Woll. And her name in the show is Karen.
She's
Page.
Great.
Oh yeah. She's awesome.
Yeah. She's great in that. And you know, there's times that you could say, wow, she's kind of whiny, but there's a difference because she loves Daredevil and she loves Matt Murdock.
Right.
She's in love with Matt Murdock. So there's a big difference on her reactions to what he's doing. You know what
maybe,
I mean? Compared to
maybe
what?
Foggy's in love with him too.
Could be.
I mean, if Foggy loves him too, is that going to change your opinion? Are you going to say it's okay then?
No, because Matt Murdock doesn't feel the same way.
Does Matt Murdock love Karen Page?
I think he does to a point. I think he does, but I think it's, you know, there's always going to be that physical, and I don't mean like physical attraction, right? I think it's more of the physical athletic portion of what he's doing nightly, right? Right. And that, I think that's why his passion with Elektra was so different, because they had this commonality of nightly things that were going on, right? And she spoke to a very, I don't want to say visceral, but animalistic portion of Matt.
Spoke
that
to his core.
Karen doesn't. Yeah, and Karen doesn't do that.
Right.
I think he wants to love her emotionally, you know? And I think he feels bad when he's not reciprocating the obvious feelings she has for him.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they do love each other. I can tell you that from the comics. They do get together and stuff. But
yeah. But Kevin Smith killed her.
Kevin Smith kills everybody.
Yeah. He just kills Karen Page. It's like, fuck it.
Fuck this girl.
Kill that bitch.
Hey, now. She's not a bitch. She's a nice lady.
All right.
I don't know. I'm trying to defend people, all right? Trying to do the right thing here.
Trying to defend a comic book character.
Hey, now. Gotcha. I can. I will. That's bullshit, Kendrick. That's bullshit.
She's a bully. Right.
Yeah, Karen Page is a bully. Oh, God.
Oh, dude, I got to tell you, though.
Huh.
I watched the documentary. I can't remember the name of it. I told you when I was watching it, but it's a documentary about the birth and the evolution of DC Comics.
Right.
And their take on Superman.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, man, I was like, okay, I can see why people like Superman more now after watching that and what it meant to the writers.
Yeah.
And to Schuster and Spiegel and what they did when they created him and what he meant to them and the fact that they actually tried shopping him around for like 2-3 years and nobody wanted him.
For a long time.
Everybody wanted Westerns and stuff like that.
Funny Animals.
It was like a couple
funny
years.
Funny Animal comics and Westerns and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. They didn't want
not
this.
Westerns,
and then the Superman frenzy that happened in 1939 was crazy,
dude.
It was almost as big as the Beatles of the 60s. All, I mean, but with kids. There were Superman parties. There was
bigger than the Beatles.
Paraphernalia.
I think it was bigger than the Beatles.
I don't think so. I think you want to say it's bigger than the Beatles.
Okay.
But no,
okay.
Dude.
So we have a character who defines an entire medium of storytelling and created a billion-dollar industry.
Over time. Okay. Over time. In the spotlight, well, not in the spotlight, but in the microcosm of that time period of when like the Beatles landed in the 60s, right? America lost its freaking mind. And still to this point, when they played on Ed Sullivan, more people tuned into that per capita, right? Because you got to take into account percentage-wise. More people percentage-wise tuned into the Beatles on Ed Sullivan than anything else in TV history. The streets were empty because people were home to watch the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. It was, and you know what? The thing is you can't really compare because it's two separate mediums altogether.
You know because you were there, but old man.
Yeah, it wasn't even a thought in my dad's eye, man. You know, I'm just saying that there was a difference. Now, over time, but actually you can't even say that because the Beatles defined a whole music generation. And the influence they have had over time, still to this day, in pop music is tremendous.
I'll give you that. But
and the fact that everything that they've had probably the same type of influence.
Well,
just on a different medium.
Think about it this way. Think about it this way. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to discredit it.
Them and the Rolling Stones.
I don't want to discredit anything the Beatles did because, I mean, it's clearly a huge thing in the music industry. But there was already a music industry. There was already music out there. Superman, however.
Yeah, there was.
Superman, however, showed up and in basically a tank train roll through the United States and the world, created the comic book industry, created a comic book genre. Like, there wouldn't be any other superheroes, if it wasn't for him.
That's true. He created a genre, not the industry, but he created a genre. That is definitely true.
Well, he did create the genre of comic books, or popularize and help push the idea that comic books weren't just reprints from Sunday comics.
Well, they already weren't. I mean, Detective Comics was already out, and there was already other comic books that are already out. Just nobody was doing
that's
a superhero.
That's why I said popularize.
You're right in saying that. Yeah. That you're right in saying that he did a full genre, but you also said that he made a comic book industry, and I'm just saying that he didn't make an industry, but he made a genre that probably saved the industry.
Well, I mean,
in the long run,
I would say that he had a huge part in creating it too, because at that point, the quote unquote comic book industry was.
How do you create something that's already there?
I mean, you think about this, right? Superman showed up in 1938. At that point, comic books themselves were still very much in their infancy. They weren't even a decade old at that point. For the most part, Detective Comics was 1937, 2 years, you know, a year prior, 1 year prior. That's it. You know, you can go back to more fun comics and the other ones that were a little bit older. If you really want to go back to like the first quote unquote comic book, you're in the 20s, but those don't really count because they're just reprints of newspaper comics. I think the first comic book that had an original story in it was like 1934, 1935, something like that. If you're within the first couple of years or something, it's like you're taking this idea. And you have something show up and explode it. It creates it. Yeah, it didn't. It wasn't like he was the very first thing to ever show up in a comic book, and all of a sudden there's this whole new thing. But there was this new thing that this one character showed up. It was like, okay, this is legitimate. This is a thing now. And it blew up. It went from being this tiny thing that, you know, had a couple of things coming out each month or every quarter to an entire industry, an entire genre, entire, you know, subculture of youth and of adults who write and draw and read and consume and love these comic books, to where in 1939 you had the world, you know, you had Superman pirated chalk statues showing up at carnivals. In 1939 you had the World's Fair where they were giving away comic books with Superman in it. By 1942 Superman had a cartoon show, he had a radio show, he had movies coming out, you know, within,
which they didn't want to do. Did you hear that? Max Fleischer did not want to do
it. It was too hard. It was too much money. It was expensive.
Well, no, he didn't want to do it. He said, you want me to do this, then you got to pay me more money. And they said, right, okay, exactly. Here you go. And then he made a beautiful freaking animation.
He made some amazing cartoons that still hold up to today, you know. But, I mean, you have like within 5 years of that character coming out, this, you know, from 1938 to 1942, 43, this whole entire new subculture and genre and, I mean, I'm still going to say industry because if it wasn't for him, there would be no comic book industry, had exploded into the world. And it's, you know, because of this one character that this billion-dollar thing spawned from it. And if you just look at the first 5 years, that's insane. You know, today or in the last anywhere goes from showing up to as big as he was in the first couple of years and has ever happened that way again.
Well, you can't. You can't. Right? It's like Elvis. Elvis showed up and rock and roll hit all the way coast to coast.
Right.
He made it accessible for the youth to enjoy comic books, not just waiting for Sunday comics or comics or whatever it could be. You know, and I get it. I get what you're saying. I totally agree. I'm just saying he popularized a genre and then helped save that industry. You're right. I mean, it wouldn't have exploded into what it is today or what it was then, because I don't think people have... Like, I don't think a lot of people of our age understand how big comic books actually were in the late 30s and early 40s.
Or even into the 50s and 60s. I mean.
Yeah, well, the 50s and 60s, there was a big downturn because of things that we've already talked about. Yeah, well, you had World War II happen.
Yep.
And then they had, and there was a lot of, you know, kill Hitler, but yeah, but you know, fighting of the Nazis, and then the American patriotism that was bringing into the comic books, because a lot of those artists and writers went to war. They did. Signed up, and if they could go, they went, and it was a big deal. And so then they come back, and you know, as they slowly came back, they started, you know, using that influence of what they went through into their comic books and all that kind of stuff. But then things started to change and people's relationship with comic books changed. And then you had the whole Innocence thing with I can never remember the name of that stupid book, but you know, horror comics became the norm, which was, I think, was a detriment to superheroes at that time. And then you get the 60s, and thank God in the 60s, what came out in the 60s, Johnny?
Daredevil.
That's right.
1964.
And we get to Daredevil. And you can literally trace Daredevil back because of character like Superman coming into being. Well, actually, literally because of Superman coming into being and then saying, okay, let's start making all these characters. And then Marvel started doing the same thing, right? Oh, my God, DC has this huge hit on our hands. How do we do this? And then, okay, let's do this, this, and this. Now, in the 60s, things changed because DC went very weird.
Yeah, they did.
And Marvel said... We want realism. We want real angst in our characters. And I think, you know, that grittiness that Daredevil provided was people, I think, wanted that realism. And Marvel said, here you go.
Exactly. And Daredevil was the first, I don't know if he was the first ever. I think he was the first ever, but he was at least the first mainstream superhero with a disability because he's blind. And
yeah,
he showed up in the 60s. He was a blind superhero. Now he has radar vision and different artists have portrayed that differently. Different people have talked about them being, he can just see with radar. Well, it's not, he doesn't just see. I mean, he doesn't see like you and I see.
Right.
What he sees, I mean, I didn't like how they showed it in the Daredevil movie, where it was like basically he saw like red wireframes. That was stupid. But in the Daredevil Netflix show, where they showed the episode World on Fire in season one, where they kind of showed a little bit. They showed a little bit of how he sees. I was like, that's awesome, because it shows, he can quote-unquote see things, but nothing is cleared. You know, it's very much visceral, and he sees with all of his senses, not just his eyes, because his eyes don't work. And it's insane. It's awesome. That's what.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's actually what first intrigued me about Daredevil. Because when, as I talked about before, when I was a kid, I got a couple boxes of comic books from my dad's friend at work. And in that box was the Miller Daredevil run and a bunch of other ones. Like, I think I had Daredevil like issue 120 something.
This dude just gave me some comic books. Dude. He gives me the full Miller Daredevil run.
Dude, I had Daredevil 120 through like 200. Like all of them.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Along with all the other stuff we talked about.
You know what's cool about the Daredevil, how he gets his abilities with the whole car wreck and the chemicals that spills, I know where you're going and everything. With this. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles use that as their inception. Yep. And Marvel was cool with it. They're like, yeah.
Yep.
You know, and some people have tried to take that out, but that's one of the coolest portions of TMNT is that they're so tightly close to Daredevil, which makes sense because Daredevil is all about martial arts.
Right. And the whole thing, I love it, the fact that in canon of TMNT, of the original storyline, the same toxins that gave Daredevil his powers is the goo or whatever they want to call it, is what made the turtles, which is awesome because two things I love, right? But,
yeah,
you know, and like when I was a kid, I got those comics and I just sat and read them and I was like, oh, Daredevil's cool. He's blind and he's a superhero. That's amazing. That's awesome. And he's an acrobat and he has this billy club thing that shoots and he can like lasso it around shit and swing around and he's acrobatic and he's not like superhuman strong, but he's a kick-ass fighter and he's like an MMA fighter. I mean, he's just awesome. And I just fell in love with the character. Right. It was literally it's the only Marvel series that I ever decided that I want to try and collect the whole thing, you know? So besides like Wolverine, the only Marvel
series. Still need
series,
that number one.
Right. The only Marvel series from the 60s, right? I mean, I had like Wolverine and stuff in the later ones, but like of the Silver Age Marvel comics, I was like, Daredevil. I want Daredevil. So
yeah,
I have a box over here. I pretty much have Daredevil 2 on with a couple missing. I still need that number one because I want it, but it's so expensive now.
I know. And it's only really skyrocketed in the last 5 years.
Yeah. It used to be you could buy number one in like decent shape for like, you know, $500 or so or less.
Yeah. So to put a cap or a pin in Mr. Murdoch, the Frank Miller run, the Daredevil Netflix series, both amazing. Amazing. Now, the movie we like because we like comic book movies and we think it's fun. And if you take it on that regard, that it's just a fun movie to watch, you'd probably enjoy it. Now, if you watch the Netflix series, then go back and watch that movie, you'd probably be like sorely disappointed.
Yeah, you would not be happy with yourself if you did that.
Yeah.
But if you watch Netflix and love Daredevil and you go back and watch the Affleck one with an open mind and say, okay, let's watch it to see this take on it and let's just have fun with it and suspend disbelief of what you know of Daredevil, I still say it's a fun ride. There's some iffy special effects, especially in the end scene when he fights Bullseye. But if nothing else, just watch it for Colin Farrell's Bullseye, and it's worth it.
he does an amazing job. But you know what's weird is I can't name any other writers that I want to read that worked on the Daredevil runs, and I'm sure there's more of them that are just maybe not as good, but just or very close to being as good as the Miller run.
The Frank Miller run is really good. No, so when they rebooted Daredevil or they restarted the numbering in the 90s, Kevin Smith wrote it for a while, or Kevin Smith wrote a Daredevil run. It was really good, and then the one in the 90s was by the art was by Joe Quesada, and I think he wrote it too. I can't remember, but it was. Whatever one Daredevil won with it was Brian Michael Bendis worked on issues like 16 or something like that. And his run, I'm trying to remember all this in my head right now. Bendis worked on Daredevil and like Daredevil Volume 2, like issues 16 through 20 something. And it's like I think it's called Wake Up or something like that, but it's a phenomenal series. But David Mack, if you know who he is, he's an amazing artist with watercolors. He did Kabuki. He's doing covers for American Gods right now. He does covers for Valiant. He's fantastic. He did a bunch of covers and did interior work for Daredevil in that same run. And like Daredevil Volume 2 issue, like I think 1 through 50 are just solid, solid comics. It's a great modern version of Daredevil to read. And if anybody wanted to read Daredevil and couldn't get a hold of the Frank Miller ones, whatever, I would just recommend go pick up volume like 1 and 2 of the 2000s run of that series and read that. And you will not be disappointed. They are so good.
Cool. Yeah, I'll have to check them out because I want to read more of them because the ones I did read, I liked a lot. And then I, you know, my pull list is so big right now, it's hard to go back and read more.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Oh, I know.
Because I'm reading Curse Words right now, and Birthright, and, you know, of course, Copperhead, and Saga,
right.
and Batman, and Detective Comics. And
hey, you know how big my pull list is right now?
Like one?
Zero.
Or zero.
Zero. Yeah. I had to cancel everything I was getting because of just bills and kids and stuff. I just didn't have time to go one pick them.
It's tough.
I didn't have time to one. I wasn't going to picking them up like ever, and so I was like, I just cancel it for now. When I can have time to come get them and pay for them and have the time to read them, then I'll reboot it back up. But I do everything off Comixology right now because it's like I just look at it on my phone or my tablet and I just get it real quick. You know, and with Comixology Unlimited, they actually have a lot of these series that I've been meaning to read.
Yeah, and it's tough too because if you have a small comic book store that you get your pull from,
yeah,
if you don't go pick them up, that hurts them. That hurts them a lot.
It does, I hate doing that. And with my recent move up to where I'm at now, I don't know any of the stores around me. I think the closest store to me is in Auburn, which is 30 minutes away.
But you know those guys.
I do. I don't know their store though. I know them from going to shows, Hills of Comics. But
you should go check it out.
How often am I in Auburn? Right.
Right.
You know, I go there for movies sometimes because they have a good movie theater there.
There you go.
So,
well, all right, man.
Hold on, quick. I just want to correct myself. I looked it up. I don't like to do corrections later on. The volume 2 of Daredevil was written by Kevin Smith and drawn by Joe Quesada for the first 16 issues or first 18 issues or something like that. So the first volume is by Kevin Smith written, and it is very good.
Oh, cool. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he did the Daredevil. Well, what else did Kevin Smith work on? He did some other stuff too, right? It wasn't just
Daredevil.
He did Daredevil
Yellow. He did Green Hornet. He's done a lot of comic book stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's unfortunate. He doesn't really do a lot of it anymore. Yeah, but he doesn't do a lot of it anymore. And there was that one where he did like, he started it and didn't finish it or something. I don't remember which one it is.
That's Daredevil Bullseye. I believe it was.
Right.
Daredevil Bullseye the Target. Yeah.
Yeah. And he never finished it, right?
Yep. He never finished that one. He also never finished Spider-Man Black Cat, The Evil That Men Do. So both those series just came out in 2002. And they got to like, I think Daredevil got one issue out and Spider-Man got three issues out and then they're never finished. Yeah.
Is that true? He never finished them?
I'm reading right now. Yeah, he never finished Daredevil. And then I think Mark Millar finished Spider-Man. Yeah, Mark Millar finished Spider-Man Black Cat in 2005. Oh, there you go.
I mean, if you're going to have anybody finish it, Mark Millar is a good person to have do it.
Yeah. Right.
Hello,
right.
Authority. So, I mean,
yeah. He never finished Daredevil Bullseye at the Target, which was funny, which sucks because the one issue was really good. And I was like, oh, I want to read more. And nothing
brilliant. Came out. Yeah. I wonder if he'd ever go back and do it. I think he's doing so many of these podcasts like, you know, this and then all that YouTube stuff that he does. He's probably just doing that.
His most recent thing, I think, was he was working on Batman 66 crossing over with the Green Hornet for DC and Dynamite.
Oh, cool.
Which is good. Yeah. He wrote Green Hornet for a long time. And I mean, his Green Hornet stuff, if you haven't read it and you like Green Hornet, it's really fun. It's really good.
This is good, man. This was a lot of fun. You told me a lot about Daredevil that I didn't know about. And so it'll be fun to re-listen to this later on and then try to get into some of the storylines. And maybe we should do a review on a storyline. Not a Frank Miller one. Let's do something different.
Yeah, we could do that. It's cool.
Yeah, everybody talks about the Frank Miller run. So let's talk about something else.
Yeah, we'll get to another one. And for everybody listening, all the stories we talked about, I'll find them all and put them all in the description down below so you can see which ones we think are good. They'll all be down there.
Wait.
What?
We didn't fucking talk about Punisher at all.
Holy God damn it. How do we forget Punisher on a Daredevil episode where he's like the best part of season 2?
He made season 2. What the fuck are we thinking?
My God. All right. Well, let's talk about him now.
Let's keep this thing rolling. God dang, I can't believe we forgot the Punisher, dude. John Bernthal, not
Berthanol.
Though, you know, he was a pain medication during that whole season. Because he did take people off their pain.
You know,
caused a lot of pain, but he ended it a lot of pain. You know what I'm saying?
Right. You know it's going to be great when somebody corrects us and say, oh, no, you're both saying it wrong.
Right.
Whatever, though.
It's not Berenthal.
It's John the fucking Punisher. Yeah. Right. It's the fucking Punisher, man.
Yeah. Have you seen the trailer yet?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. I watched it. Oh, it's amazing.
Whoever cut that trailer is a godsend. because
it's sad, man. It's
sad. But I'm sorry, like, man. No. But it was so badass when they freaking when they cut in, they synchronized the guns with the drums from one.
Whew. Yep.
I was like, oh my god. I was that's it. I was like, I'm gonna lock myself in a room and watch that entire season in one sitting. I know it already.
Yeah, it's supposed to come out in November, so I'm excited for that.
Yeah, well, they say at the end they blur the month and just put 2017, so we know it's at least 2017.
Yeah, but if you look online, everything shows November, so.
Dude, I like Thomas Jane. I thought he did a decent job. I thought the writing could have been a little better. You know what I mean? I don't think they should have changed so much of it because, you know, that whole thing of them like in the Caribbean or wherever they were. And then that
it was like 2004 when it came out. And that's when they were, you know, people were more trying to make the mainstream, not accepting the lore and doing a lot of different stuff.
They didn't want to do the dirty work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, I liked him as the Punisher. I liked the is it the second one where he goes against John Travolta as the bad guy?
No, that's the first one. That's still Thomas Jane.
Is that still the first one? Okay.
Yeah. The second one's a different actor. The second one is
Punisher Warzone.
Yeah.
Who?
It's directed by a girl, and I can't remember her name, and the guy who plays Punisher is the same guy who plays in the Warriors 3 and Thor. The big guy is Warriors 3.
Oh, really?
Same actor. I can't remember his name though, but it's a fun movie too, but.
Oh, I loved it. I thought that guy's portrayal of the Punisher was perfect. He was just so there was emotion, but emotion on a very separate level. You know what I mean?
In Warzone?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was Ray Stevenson.
Yeah. Ray Stevenson. That's right. He did a great job. I was almost surprised that they didn't bring him back for the, for that.
Well, he was busy. He's in Thor now.
Oh, I know, but yeah. I see what you're saying.
He plays Volstagg in Thor.
But don't get
now,
me wrong. So. I'm happy that John Bernthal.
Yeah.
Bernthal. I said it again.
Bernthal, whatever his name is.
Bernthal is doing the Punisher because he's doing an amazing job. I mean, it's
he's great.
Making me forget about Shane from The Walking Dead, that's for sure.
Well, I don't even know who that is.
See, there you go. He played Shane on The Walking Dead, and he's kind of like, he's a good guy, but then a whole bunch of stuff happens and he ends up being kind of a bad guy. But I don't know. It's kind of a weird situation. And anyways, I mean, he ends up dying, obviously, because he's not on that show anymore. But it was a weird he was good. And the thing is he's only on this show for like two seasons and people still remember Shane.
Right.
You know,
when you play a good character.
Well, I don't think it's the character. I honestly think it's John Bernthal, man. That guy that's just I think he's just good.
But he was only on Daredevil for half a season. Everybody talks about him still, so.
Yeah, man. You know, I think he actually campaigned to become the Punisher. Like, he sent in to show, you know what I mean, to show him dressed up like the Punisher. And somebody helped him. I want to say that, you know, this is killing me. I can't remember. Who was it that helped him? John Bernthal. It looks like it's Bernthal, but...
Yeah, maybe it's Bernthal. I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
Oh, Tom Holland helped him land the role.
Was it Tom Holland?
Spider-Man. Yeah.
That's so weird. Just because of the age gap.
Yeah, Tom Holland helped John Bernthal, whatever, land his role as Marvel's Punisher. Huh.
Yeah. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, they used mock scenes together to...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. He campaigned to get that role, man, and you could see why, because he just plays him perfect. He's awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
He's just brutal, and it's... As you talked about before, Punisher's not one of my favorite characters because I don't really... In the comics, I'm not into that kind of mercenary that just kills everybody like that. But in Daredevil, he's just... It's so badass. And I've always loved the interaction between Daredevil and Punisher in the comics because it's so... There's such...
Opposites?
They're such the same, but... Well, they're such the same, yet opposites, and it's a lot of things, right?
Right.
They're both fighting for the same thing, but in very different methods.
Right.
And that scene in Daredevil season 2 when Punisher has Daredevil tied to the top of the building and they're talking back and forth, that's straight out of the comics. And it was like watching the comic pages come to life. I was like, oh, this is so freaking cool.
Yeah. Brings a tear to your eye.
Right. And,
because you're watching the, little, the something that you love. And, no, I'm actually being kind of serious. I'm not really, I'm laughing because it's funny, but I'm not, but I'm actually half serious because, no, I'm fully serious because it is, yeah. You're seeing something that you love in an art form that you're like, I wish I could share this with other people that make them understand how good this really is. And then when somebody transfers it to a medium that other people take serious, and then they fall in love with the character that, or characters that you loved as a little kid because you knew how cool it was and they didn't until somebody introduced them to them in a different way that you're like, now you kind of get it, you know?
Right.
That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, and it's weird because like I look back at season two of Daredevil, and while I understand why they went with Elektra as part of that season and what they did makes sense with the future of the Netflix show because it all comes to fruition in Defenders, right. You know? I still think that if it wasn't for the Punisher part of that season two would have been a huge letdown on Daredevil.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you couldn't – dude, season two would have been boring.
Right, because honestly, Kate and I watched it, and we binge-watched the first half of it that was all about Punisher.
Yeah.
And then we took – like when Punisher left and it was all about Elektra, it took us like a week or two to get through the last bit of the episodes.
That's we're exactly like Tafina and I. We started watching and we just –
we got to do it.
We were like, next one, next, next, next. And then when it became just – more about Elektra, we were just like, okay, I mean, she's a cool character. The actress who plays her is perfect for that role.
Yeah.
I think much better than what's her name that did it in 2004 or 2003.
Jennifer Garner.
Yeah. Who was fine. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't have anything against Jennifer Garner anyway. But this girl that plays her now is just, she just looks more like the role. She acts more like Elektra, you know? She just seems better all around for it. And
yeah, she does.
But
which I think that part, the Elektra stuff wasn't bad. It was just, honestly, I think if they would have switched it and done Elektra first and then Punisher second, like, because you're coming out the gate super strong with Punisher to open up season two.
Yeah.
And then you're going into Elektra and it's like, okay, you've had this insanely good set of episodes with the Punisher where he's just taking care of business and him and Daredevil's interaction back and forth. And then it was basically like two little mini seasons, you know?
Well,
and I think if they would have switched him around and done Elektra first and then, you know, then Punisher, maybe like a tie-end episode with the finale, with what happened with Elektra at the end, you know, at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Or if they would have interwoven him a little bit more, it would have been better. But having it Punisher, then Elektra just made it to like, it was like, oh my God, this is so cool. What the hell is happening now?
Yeah. 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 Totally. I 100% agree. I mean, the whole Punisher sequence is so gripping, you know? And it's like you can't blame the cops for dealing with him the way they do. And then at the same time, when you see the brutality that the Punisher has gone through, and then once you, and especially if you've read any of the Punisher books, then it all makes perfect sense for the way he is. And it's just, I don't know, man. They pulled it off beautifully.
They did. And like, I remember watching it. I remember when Punisher was locked down in the hospital after they caught him. And I kept thinking to myself, how is he going to get out of this? How is the Punisher going to get out of this? Because he has to. And Kate and I were watching it going, okay, what's happening next? What's going next? You know, we just had to keep, I think we're up until like 4 a.m. finishing out the Punisher story on that show when we watched it.
Wow. Yeah.
And we had to keep pushing next, next, next.
I'm super excited for that whole, I mean, because the Punisher is one of my favorite characters. That was.
Yeah, I know.
When I was, 1987, I was 13, that's when the Punisher Unlimited series came out. And that was, I got that, and you know what I mean? I bought like the first 20 issues right off the newsstand. And then I had the, I need to get it again. I need to get the miniseries again. I don't have that anymore. But
is the miniseries the one where he's outside the window, like on the fire escape holding the bazooka?
That's the first one of the Unlimited series.
Oh, the Unlimited series. Yeah. Okay, that's such a cool cover.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And well, and then the mini series was supposed to be a 4-part series, I think, and then they made it a 5-part, or I can't remember. Because I think the first one says first in a 4-issue mini series, and then after that it says 2 in a 5-issue mini series. But they're all painted covers, and they look really amazing. And then you have the. And then in the 70s, you have his first appearance, which I really, Johnny, I really, really want that one. I think I want that than I want the first appearance of Wolverine.
You know, even though I'm not a huge Punisher fan, I've always wanted that issue. I've always wanted issue of 129 Spider-Man because I'm like, it's Punisher.
Well, it's Punisher. And it's a classic.
Classic
it's
cover.
A classic cover. I mean, I've never feared somebody in go-go boots ever before, but he's the guy that will make you fear him. And then
he can be wearing whatever he wants to wear, and you'll fear him.
Yeah,
he could be in a pink tutu, and you'd be like, "Nope, I'm done. Yep. I'm not messing with this guy."
Poop, run. Yep. But you know, I really do want that book, but it just keeps going up and up and up, and of course, everybody. And now with the freaking series, it'll probably be unattainable. Which right. kind of breaks my heart.
It's like the Hulk 181. It's unless you want to dump a lot of money, it's kind of, I mean, you're not going to get it unless you have a bunch of money to spend.
Yeah.
Or get really lucky on a find.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can get the Italian version for like $75, but you know, I want to be able to understand. Yeah, it. But
at that point, just buy a reprint.
Dude, even the reprints are going for like $100.
Right.
It's like, what the hell, man? And then there's a couple magazine sized books. Is it Marvel Presents or Marvel? I can't remember. Russ actually has Marvel second Treasury. And third appearance of the Punisher.
Oh, right.
And there,
he was in the Marvel graphic novel series.
Well, these are like a magazine that have separate Marvel stories in them.
Right. Well, back in the 80s and 70s, they used to have, and it might be the magazines, but I know Punisher is in like, they did large format magazine size, but they were square bound Marvel graphic novels that were single stories about like the Punisher and about other characters.
Yeah. That's exactly what it was. And they're, I wish I could remember the name of it though, because they came out in the 70s. Anyways, Russ has them at Milk Geek Comics. They're like $150 a piece. And
that's not bad. You should buy one.
I don't have $150 to drop on it, or I would. And I'm still trying to get my Conan number one and number two.
Conan one's a hard one to get.
I have it. It's in my box, and he's been letting me make payments on it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So like $20 here, $20 there. You know what I mean? Which makes it easier. I mean, that's how I got my Batman Adventures number 12. I just paid a little bit on it at a time, and then it was done. And you know, he's cool about that kind of stuff.
So this is interesting here. I just pulled it up here. The first appearance of Punisher was in Spider-Man 129.
Yeah.
Second appearance was in Spider-Man 134, which is the first appearance of Tarantula.
Oh.
His third appearance is in Power Man Annual number 1, and his fourth appearance is in Amazing Spider-Man 162.
Interesting. I wonder if these don't count as comic books.
Oh, wait. Never mind. I can't read. So let me read that. His first appearance, 129. Second, 134. The first time he was mentioned outside of Spider-Man was Power Man number 1. And the first appearance of his main villain, Jigsaw, was in Spider-Man 162.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out what the magazine one was you had here. But
yeah, they're kind of and Marvel Preview.
Daredevil 1. Marvel Preview. There you go.
Yep.
He was in Marvel Tales 106 was the first time they reprinted 129.
Yeah, Marvel Preview then, presents the Punisher. And there's Marvel Super Action featuring the Punisher.
Oh, there you go.
And then he's on then here's the other one. And then Marvel Preview presents the Punisher. Two different storylines. And then one of them has what's her name? Oh, one of them has the first appearance of somebody else. The Huntress.
Oh.
Yeah.
The Huntress?
Yeah.
There's a Marvel Huntress?
Yeah, from like 1975.
Huh.
I could be wrong on the year.
Not know that.
But it's in but these magazine size came out in the 70s. And they're $1 a piece. Yeah. And they're painted covers.
Are you sure it was Huntress? I don't see a Marvel Huntress anywhere.
Extra, the Huntress. And Fortune, Manhunter for Hire. Yeah. It's right on the cover.
Oh, there she is. Okay. Marvel Super Action number 1 in 1976.
Is that when it was? 1976?
Yeah. She's only appeared in, like, according to this comicbookdb.com, she's only been in like three issues or something like that.
When did DC's The Huntress come out?
70 something. Hold on.
Because that would be interesting. I wonder if they had her and then, but DC put her in put their version in so many books. Marvel's like, fuck it.
Well, it depends on which version of the Huntress. So the first Huntress appeared in Sensation Comics number 68 in 1947.
Oh.
But there was also Huntress Helena Bartonelli, which appeared in 1989. And then there was another Huntress that appeared in...
But the Huntress is that'd be a hard name to market or to get a copyright on.
The copyrighted superhero and Marvel copyrighted zombie.
Yeah, because they coined the phrase. But Huntress is not... That's if you're a hunter and you're a girl, they would call you a huntress back in 1545. I'm just saying. It was more of a common thing to. I mean, I guess not a common thing to say because no one actually says, "Hey, are you a huntress?" That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that it was. It's a noun to describe somebody, so it's harder to. I think it'd be harder to copyright. I could be wrong. I'm not a copyright guy. I don't. You know, I'm not. I don't got no law degree.
I don't know.
I mean,
I don't know.
I think it's interesting, and I don't think Marvel and DC are apt to just sue each other as much either.
Not anymore. They don't really talk anymore at all.
Yeah, which is kind of sad because the crossover stuff was fun when they did.
Yeah, there was an article. Why did DC and there's an article about why they stopped working together.
Oh, really? Oh, wait, you talked about that. Like,
yeah, I didn't have the details on it. There was some like
Marvel said something, or
I think, you know, it was Joe Quesada said something, and DC was like, "Fuck you."
Yeah. Well, whatever. What are you gonna do?
With the first time they talked together was with the whole milkshake thing, when they acknowledged each other's companies.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
But yeah, there's a whole reason why. I think this is the article here. It's on Screen Rant, but I gotta like peruse through it. The last time they teamed up was in 2003 for JLA Avengers.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. So, but you know, we're talking about the Punisher right now inside the Daredevil universe, inside the Netflix Marvel Hell's Kitchen centric universe.
Yeah, I mean it's a lot. A lot happens in Hell's Kitchen. Like,
seems like everything happens in Hell's Kitchen.
Well, unless you're Luke Cage, then you're in Harlem,
right?
Because Luke Cage takes place in Harlem.
Is Harlem adjacent to Hell's Kitchen? I've never been in New York, so I don't know.
Let's look it up. Hell's Kitchen's in Manhattan. Let's go. Actually, Google Maps would be easier. It's where there's an actual place called Hell's Kitchen.
Oh, they're not too far away. 21 minutes, 5.5 miles.
That's not bad.
No, not too bad at all. And I guess if you're Jessica Jones, you can just jump there.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, Hell's Kitchen has a Lincoln Tunnel. It's got on the waterfront. Yeah, it's no wonder it's so good for a character like Daredevil to have a series in.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. It's interesting. A lot of Marvel stuff is New York centric because they're right there in New York.
Well, they're in New York. Yeah. Yeah.
DC was in New York for a long time too, right?
It wasn't until a couple years ago they moved to the West Coast.
Now they're what, in LA?
Yeah, they're in LA now. But for a long time they were crosstown rivals.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. That's probably why you had some of the greatest stuff come out of the 70s and 80s and 60s, 70s and 80s there for the superhero genre for our age group.
Yeah.
You know, because the competition was probably just ridiculous. You know, and then you had people living together that worked for competing companies like Lynn Wine and that did Swamp Thing. And who's the guy that created Man Thing?
Is that Roy Thomas?
I don't remember. But remember, Kevin Joseph told the story of them living together and they both developed a similar swamp type creature. Right. And neither one of them knew that, but they're roommates.
Yeah, Mike, it was created by, well, according to this thing here, it was Stan Lee, Gary Conaway, Roy Thomas, and Gray Morrow. So, I'm pretty sure it wasn't Stan Lee he was living with. So it's one of the other three.
Yeah. And Roy Thomas was pretty, I mean, because Roy Thomas was doing Conan as well, right?
Yeah.
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 Which we talk about on our blog. If you want to go check it out, go to spoilercountrypod.com and read my Conan review. that's funny.
Nice little plug and play.
Yeah. A little plug on our plug. So, you know what I think we need to do, though? Because I know you said that he's not one of your favorite characters, but you obviously do love the Punisher. You got some passion there for him, more than you probably thought, because he is so original. You know what the closest DC character to Punisher for me is? Well, actually, who do you think is the closest DC character for you? Let me see that.
So who do I think is the DC equivalent of the Punisher?
Yep.
I think the only one that comes close to my mind would be someone like Lobo. But he's very different because he's you know, interstellar.
You know who character? You know who he's for me is? I think you're gonna be like, oh no shit, Jonah Hex.
Yeah, although Jonah Hex is a bounty hunter.
What? Jonah Hex starts because what happens to his family?
Yeah. So Jonah Hex. Yeah, I mean they have similar backstories, but yeah, Jonah Hex becomes more of a bounty hunter and takes up.
But Jonah Hex isn't just a bounty. Yeah, he's a bounty hunter. He's looking for, but he generally kills people.
A lot of people.
Yeah. And then, you know, he doesn't take any shit. The only difference is that he has a title of bounty hunter.
True. And he's also.
And Punisher is at the end of the day, you could say Punisher is a bounty hunter because all he does, all he attacks is criminals. That's what he's looking for. And he generally does organized crime criminals. And that's what Jonah Hex does.
Right. Did you hear? So I don't know if I sent you now, but there was somebody who took like every appearance of Jonah Hex ever that they could find, read through all of them, and tallied up how much he's worth or how much bounty he's made in his all of his career of bounty hunting.
Oh, nice. And how much was it?
I'll have to, I can't remember. It was something like $700,000 at the time, which is a lot of money.
Yeah, dude, that's like
shoved at it to now. It's a ton of money.
Yeah, but, that's like $100 million.
Yeah, I'll find the article and link it in the description. But it was pretty cool because the guy's like, why'd you do this? I don't know. I got bored, wanted to figure it out. Some college kid did it.
That's funny. I mean, that's really bored.
Yeah. But I mean, hey, cool.
Yeah. I don't think I would have ever thought of, let's tally up Jonah Hex's bounty.
Well, you know, college kids do strange things sometimes, but whatever.
I love Jonah Hex, dude. He's one of my favorite characters of all time.
I've always wanted to get the All-Star Western
Is it number 8 or
8? Is it 8?
I think it's or number 10. I just looked it up the other day. Yeah, I've always wanted to get that issue as well.
I used to have the issue before it, which was the first El Diablo.
Yeah.
I think, but not the one I wanted. Is it 10? I think it's 10. Yeah, it's number 10. Cuz All-Star Western number 2 is El Diablo and then number 10 is it says Batlash.
Yeah, it's number 10. That's what I thought it was number 10. It was like number 8 or number 10, one of the two.
There you go. Yeah, I've always wanted that one because it just he's a cool character. You know?
He's a fun character, but it's funny that you like, he's a cool character, and you're like, kind of like with Punisher. But they're like the same freaking thing. The only thing different is Jonah Hex has some mystical power there because he was brought back to life.
The difference is it's okay to mass kill people when you're in a Western, but when you're in modern-day New York, you don't do that shit.
That's what it is. God, it just took you 30 years to figure it out. That's awesome.
Because you don't kill people. We are civilized folk in modern time. Yeah. We don't do that anymore.
But now you're gonna sit back and think. I actually been thinking about that for when, because I knew who the Punisher was before I knew who Jonah Hex was. No, personally,
I think I was the opposite.
For me personally.
No, I was just saying that I think I was the opposite. But yeah.
Yeah. So. As a matter of fact, I thought Jonah Hex, honestly, was a character born out of the 90s because my buddy was like, yeah, because there was a miniseries or a series in the 90s that got kind of popular there for a little bit. And my buddy Dave Deliria, who lives in Bremerton, he's a great guy, man. We've been friends for a long time. And he collected comic books and his dad collected comic books. And Dave still I bet his dad still collects comic books. And but his dad had an amazing collection, you know, and I remember going to his house and he was like, oh yeah, check it out. My dad just got this. And it was the Jonah Hex run and it was from the 90s. So I thought, oh, that's cool. I didn't even know who this character was. And we started reading it. And it really wasn't until the movie came out that I went back and was like, oh shit, he's old. He's not old, but he's been around for a long time. You know,
when the movie came out, I was still on because I had
the 2005,
something like that. But I had a comic book. I think it was 07, actually, because I was already with Kaylee when it came out. But when it came out, we still had stuff at the comic book store.
Yeah.
And because of that, we would get sent like promo stuff, like free tickets to movies.
2010.
2010. Okay. Yeah. So I was definitely married by then. But so we were still getting free promo stuff. So I remember in the mail, we got free tickets to go see it, as well as posters and some free comic books.
Yeah.
But we didn't go see it.
Wow!
And I still haven't seen that movie.
Okay, so
nope.
It's not the best comic book movie produced, and it's not. I mean, but I thought it was fun. I thought it was true to the character. I thought it was something. I enjoyed it. If you're a Jonah Hex fan, I don't know. I mean, I'm such a homer for these kind of movies, anyways. So maybe I'm a bad person to ask.
I mean, you like BVS, so.
Well, yeah, it's a fun movie. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Hey, man, like what you want to like. It's okay.
Yeah, I think it's worth a watch.
I want to see it regardless of what people said about it. I've still always wanted to see it. I just haven't. I should just watch it.
Yeah, I mean,
Who's the guy that plays him? He's playing Cable now.
Josh Brolin.
Yeah, I thought Josh Brolin. I like Josh Brolin, you know? So,
yeah, me too.
So I thought he was good. Megan Fox wasn't annoying in it. So
that's shocking.
That was good. Well, I don't know. She doesn't annoy me. I don't know why people get all up on Megan Fox.
She only annoys me in the Turtles movies. Like, she was fine in Transformers. She's fine in most things this year. And I just did not like her in.
You don't like her as April O'Neil? Why?
No, not at all.
Because she's not redhead?
She doesn't act like April O'Neil to me.
I think she acts the way the writers wrote her. I don't think that's her fault.
I'm not saying it's her fault. I'm just saying I don't like her. I don't like how they I don't like how they did that then. But yeah. I don't think her character fit with what that character should be.
Right. Now I can see that. But you see a lot of people just hate on Megan Fox, and her being in a movie is not going to make me go see it. Her being in a movie is not going to make me not want to see it.
Exactly. You know what
I mean?
Same way.
I think she's fine. I mean, care. She's a very good looking girl, and I don't know. Maybe her getting fired from Transformers is what gives people really a bad taste, you know, because I guess she was kind of being a brat about some stuff. But I don't really know because I wasn't there. So it's hard to say, right?
Right.
So
right,
I don't know.
Right.
It's like whatever. But she wasn't annoying in that movie. The character was decent. She's, you know, pretty strong. She's a pretty strong lady in the movie.
Yeah, so basically, I need to go see Jonah Hex.
Yeah, go
so
check it out. You know, watch it. You know
did
what?
You ever this
actually gives me an idea, real quick. I'm sorry.
What's that? Go ahead.
We should look at. Let's pick 10 DC characters and 10 Marvel characters, and then talk about their antithesis. Which I mean is, what character in DC closely resembles Spider-Man, and then talk about their differences and why they actually are similar, and then what characters. Okay. Like we're doing right now with Jonah Hex and Punisher. Matter of fact, I think we could still do a full episode between Jonah Hex and Punisher, and this is a mini preview of that. And then kind of go through it, like doing Moon Knight and Batman, or maybe we do Moon Knight or Batman and Daredevil based on what you're saying, but maybe we compare it with Moon Knight so that we could say, this is the reasons why. What do you think of that?
I like it. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Put it in the OneNote. Let's put it in the OneNote.
I'm going to. Just so for those who don't know, we have a OneNote Bible that we keep that has show topic ideas. And underneath that, we have
a long list.
A long list of show topic ideas. And so when we can't think of something to talk about the day of, because generally our show, that's what happens, right? Hey, what do you want to talk about today? Oh, let's do this. Okay.
And then we make it all up as we go.
Yeah, and then we make it all up as we go, which I think it makes it more natural, which I actually kind of like.
Right.
So, all right. Well, you know, hey, we forgot about Punisher. We wanted to bring it in, so...
But we made it right.
We made it right.
We brought him in.
Yeah, we brought him in. So if you haven't watched Daredevil Season 2, or if you haven't watched Daredevil at all on Netflix, get off your ass.
What's wrong with you?
Or maybe get on your ass. Turn on the TV.
Get on your ass.
Turn on Netflix and watch Season 1, then watch Season 2, and then Marvel in the way Marvel does their seasons of TV with Netflix.
Right. Yes. So up next, we should go ahead and tell everybody what we're doing with the Netflix shows here, because it's my idea and I want to say it, if you don't mind.
Yeah, do it.
Okay. So what we're doing this whole week is we're doing Netflix week, right? Marvel Netflix week. So each day, today, Daredevil. Tomorrow, you're going to hear Jessica Jones, then Luke Cage, then Iron Fist, and then we're going to talk about Defenders. And so tomorrow is Jessica Jones, which is one of my favorite of all the shows, because I love that show. So it's going to be an exciting episode, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And we're going to have a special guest for Jessica Jones, right?
Hopefully two.
Two? Yeah,
two
maybe two.
Guests.
That's true. But one
maybe
is
two.
Confirmed. Who's the hard confirm?
The hard confirm is my wife, Kaylee, who is a huge fan of Jessica Jones. She talks about that show to everybody who talks about Netflix or Marvel with her. She's like, nope, you have to watch Jessica Jones. It's amazing.
Yeah, and if you've listened to Y2CL Radio in the past, then you'll be very familiar with Kaylee.
Yes, and you'll be very familiar with her love for Jessica Jones because she's dropped it on that show before, too.
Awesome.
So,
awesome.
That'll be good.
All right.
So until then.
Well, do you want to, well,
back,
not to be a weird.
No, until then, back to the old intro we did before this.
No, we just got to be able to splice this in right before and then get into this. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to check us out on Twitter. Check us out on Facebook. Check us out on YouTube. Listen to us on iTunes. If you do listen to us on iTunes, please review. Please give us 5 stars. That helps us out tremendously. Don't forget,
yes,
we're
please.
Also on TuneIn, Google Play, Stitcher, and a plethora of others. So just give us a search if you need to.
Hit us up on Twitter. Talk to us. Email us, spoilercrunch@gmail.com. Other than that, thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Enjoy Daredevil.
Peace.